Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 11, delivered on September 25, 2018. The title of this lecture is The Time Value of Money.
Today, the time value of money. Now, the first thing that I'm going to show you is how to download a virtual TI-83 calculator that's free. Once you download it, it's there forever on your computer. And if you know how to archive, even when you get a new computer, you can just copy over the .exe file, the zip file, and get it again. Now, again, I don't keep my bookmarks. I hear, so you'll have to bear with me while I pull up the website where you can get that calculator and download it. Write down this website. If you don't have a TI-83 physical calculator yet, well, you can download this. It's almost as good. Of course, you have to have a computer. There's a way you can do this on a smartphone, but it is more complicated because you have to do something with ROM, read-only memory, and all that. Is there some reason why this sucks? I just double-clicked. There. Okay, the first thing you're going to do, and give me a second to get to the place, TI-83 emulator, later. Now, this is a Google site, and you type in this right here. And I'm going to put this up in big writing for you. Boy, this it's like all of a sudden this computer is really super slow.
Will we be able to put the link on ReggieNet?
I could. Yeah, I could. Actually, I might do that too. But, yeah. Is there some reason why this is dragging? Okay. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'll also put a link on my isu-prof.com podcasting site as well for this. But let me show you what you do just to be sure. Hang on. Wow. This is just like...
You're really struggling there.
It's bad enough. I mean, this thing is acting like it's as old as I am. There we go. And then this would be your site where you can download the TI-83 calculator. It'll just pop up here on this. And I will put the link on ReggieNet. That's a good idea. But anyway, it's HTTPS. It's a secure sites.google.com/site/ all one word, TI-83 interactive calculator /calculator. And that'll take you there. Now, just to make sure that you click, once you're at that site, click download. And you save the file. Don't just open the file, save it in case you need to open it, in case you need the file again if the calculator gets corrupted. You'll have the original file. Okay. And then you wait. Completed. Open the file. Now this will be a zip file. You extract all. It doesn't really matter where you put this. Just put it in downloads. And then it'll show you the folder. Now here's what you do. Once you've got the unzipped folder, double click on the folder VTI-83. Now take the VTI EXE file, it's VTI 83 in the folder, VTI 83, and just send it to your desktop. Send to desktop, create a shortcut. Now, once you do that, there it is, your calculator. And once you double click on it, you have the 83, the TI 83 plus. And this is this calculator is an algebraic arithmetic math calculator, but it has all these apps that are finance apps. And I mean, I don't think there's anything, there are some things that are just faster to do with arithmetic on the main face of the calculator. But finance, for almost anything that we would have in this class, you've got an app for it. There is an app here in this calculator. TVM is a time value of money solver. And so right there, you have one of the most common that we would use. Finding the payments, finding the interest rate, finding the present value, the number of periods, the future value, net present value, which we'll do in a couple of weeks, internal rate of return, find the balance on a loan after a certain number of months, how much principal you have left, how much interest you have left. You're all good. You're good. Pardon? Yes. Thank you. I mean, it's all there for you. You don't have to do a lot of this without. But like I said, some of them, it's some things in these finance time value of money are easier to do, actually faster, if you just do them on your own. Oops, I didn't mean to do that. Get out of there. Okay, now second quit. I'm going to leave this here for a while I talk about some more basic things to start this lecture off. Starting off. Madam, I should like you to lend me a dollar and I'll give you a dollar back in a year. Are we good? Okay. You're not a finance major, right?
No.
Okay, good. Finance major. I see you. Okay, sir. You lend me a dollar today, I'll give you a dollar back in a year. Why not? What? That was not what I was expecting. That was so totally over there. I mean, that's like I was expecting to go to Denny's for a grand slam and the mother alien ship took me up to mother alien ship central. You don't know what I'm talking about, do you? You know how the alien ships take cows? And they take them. You know where they take them? They take them to the cow research planet. Except for that time that the cows rebelled, and then they took over the ship, and they commandeered the ship, and they founded a colony called Cow Colony out beyond Saturn. Okay, now, I shall lend you, you lend me a dollar, and I'll give you a dollar back in a year. Why not?
What's in it for me?
A dollar in a year. Oh, you want interest.
That would be nice.
Yes, please. Yeah. Okay, the thing here is, that's the idea, is that we charge interest. The problem is that when I say interest, there are so many different interest rates. What we need is a basic, something that is underneath all interest rates, a substrate that all interest rates build on. Because there's some interest rates, now remember, interest rates are the price of money or capital. But they're not even a price. They're a rental rate. There is not a price for money. There's a rental rate for money. So that's why we use the term interest rate. It's like, and think about this. You, madam, are one of those real estate barons in a place like the Bloomington Normal area. you own some properties that you rent. You rent apartments here in the campus area, and you rent apartments in a nicer area of town. But for some reason, you charge higher interest rates for the apartments here than you charge in the upscale parts of town. Why is that? Yeah, there's demand everywhere. There's a much more fundamental reason. Yeah?
It's because it's more likely
that
damages are more.
Oh, damages. There's risk or higher risk here. I mean, people like this. That last place, you ran that mosh pit. I mean, and then you had that kegger, but those weren't kegs of beer. Those were kegs of beer with Addy. And I mean, it was insane that night. I mean, you had people launching. Beep! And then they became art majors because that's what happens when you burst and your brain gets hurt. But the bottom line is that there was more risk in that. So you're charging a different rate based upon risk. But underneath all of those different rates of rental rates in that case is a base rate. And then you stack rates on top of it for premiums, we call them, for different types of risks. But that base rate is what I need to talk about first and foremost. With interest rates, there is a substrate. We call it the risk-free rate. Now, can you tell me why that rental rate exists? He wanted to charge me. What is the basic, aside from any risk? I mean, I could be perfectly trustworthy to give you back your money. But there is a reason why you're going to charge me an interest rate anyway. Why is that? Why is that rate there? Go. No. Why is there a rate? Go.
We want to make more money than just magic risk.
Why?
Because we like it. Because I'm opportunity.
Oh, opportunity. Go. You're getting close. That's very close. Go.
Yeah, because you could be making more money with that money.
In other words, what you're talking about is an opportunity cost. In fact, at the base of every rate, there is the opportunity cost purely of not having the money. The opportunity cost of foregoing consumption. Do you eat? Well, if I borrow money from you, you don't get to have that money to eat with. So you have to have an incentive to give up that money that you could eat with. The base interest rate is purely an opportunity cost of foregone consumption. Purely. That's all there is to it. Then we stack interest rates, we stack premiums. I shouldn't say interest rates. You stack premiums on top of it, one after the other. Like there's a risk premium for default. There's a possibility that you won't be paid back. So you put something on there for that. That's your default premium. And then there's one for long-term lending. Interest rate volatility creates a risk in and of itself. And then there's another one, if you wanted to get rid of the loan and sell it to someone else, can you do it efficiently? That's called an illiquidity premium. So those are on top of the base rate, but there is a substrate rate. Now, what exactly it is, we don't know.
And there it is.
But anyway, for now, I'm just going to name an interest rate. Let's say APR, for the purpose of this, 6.99%, okay? That's an interest rate on a car loan. Find someone. Oh, you, madam. Pick a car. What car do you want to have, your first car? Don't go, you know, insane, not a Maserati. What car would you like for your first car? Oh, that's not bad. I had someone this morning want a Ford Fusion. Really? Okay. I mean, that's not as bad as those cars like that ugly car. Have you seen that car? It's called the Soul. I mean, I'm afraid. If I hit one of those, do I destroy a soul? I mean, God, that's like 500 years in purgatory. No, that's S-O-L-E. This is S-O-U-L. So that is really, look, a soul just went by. Oh, it fell off that bridge. It's not going to heaven. It's going to the other place. Okay.
They sacrificed their soul to drive that
down. Probably. And then there's that cube, the cube.
Oh, God.
Isn't there a recall notice for ugly? I don't know. I mean, there are some cars that are, I should talk, driving a dad car around my SUV. Yeah, nice dad car there, bro. Yeah, bite me.
At least you
don't
have to accept.
Well, you guys are past the time. Back in my day, there were these cars that were death traps, like the Ford Pinto. Any of you ever heard of the Ford Pinto? If you hit it, it would explode. You know, they were fun. You'd sneak up, tap, boom, yee-haw. Anyway, and then there was one called a Pacer. It was almost all glass. If it was in an accident, you basically became a Vegematic piece of meat. Anyway, okay, so we're going to talk about this car. What was the car again? Charger. Okay, Dodge Charger. Now, what we're going to do here is we're going to say, okay, Dodge Charger, and we're talking about $28,995. Now, let's say that you were able to negotiate it down, and then with tax and title out the door, it actually will be $28,995. And you want a loan for that amount. That is the present value. The present value. And we're going to have monthly payments. What are your monthly payments? On a 5-year loan. What are your monthly payments on a 5-year loan? Okay. Now remember, though, I've done two different things here. I talked about an annual percentage rate, and I said 5 years. So I said years twice, but I want to know about monthly payments. So the shorter period is going to be the one that drives the math. Everything has to become months in order to get monthly payments. Always remember that. Bring it to the shortest period. So if I give you an APR, but I say you're paying quarterly, you bring everything to quarters of years. And so now we simply say, okay, did you see this? This calculator actually turns off to save battery. Why? No, seriously, noobs, look. It turned off. Yeah, I know. Immersive experience. It turns off. Well, got to save computer life, battery life. No. Okay, watch. And we'll do this over again on Thursday until you are animals are doing this. Apps. And write this down. Apps. Click on the apps button. And I'm going to show you some tricks that you might not know along the way here as we do this. Okay, apps finance. That would be an enter. And now one is TVM solver. Either key in one, or since it's on that, you just hit enter. Okay, now, lock and load. Do it the way I tell you. Don't ask why, just do. N is the number of periods. Not the number of years, it's the number of periods. So you type in 5 years times 12 periods per year. In other words, and don't hit enter, just go down. In other words, you'll have 60 payments. You always bring it down to the payments. If you got a 30-year monthly payments on a house, it's 360 payments. And you let the math, let the calculator do the math. Don't ever do the math on your own. Now, the next thing. If you're using financial applications, you always use percentage. If it's just straight math, arithmetic, you do change to the decimal. But in if it's an app, a finance app, and this is not true just on TIs, in any calculator, you just key in the 6.99, but you divide it by 12 because the interest is going to be recalculated every month. Divide it by 12. And again, do it, just let the calculator do it, and then you drop down. 0.5825 per month. Okay. Now, the price value. This is the loan amount. Always, always. And this has been true of calculators, financial calculators, since the beginning, since the early 1980s. They always want a present value as a negative number. For some reason. And I've actually, I code, and I've never quite understood that. Yeah. That would have to be have been a decision that they made. It's not part of the actual coding. They'd have to have said that. And that's one reason I've been given. But I was also given another reason, too. Because if you do it there, then you, if you don't do it there, you have to do it two other places so the formulas work. I don't know. But I have heard that one. Now, a warning here. A negative sign is not a minus sign. Okay, the negative is at the bottom of the calculator, right by the enter. They don't teach it anymore in high school or grade school. But actually, a negative and a minus are two different things. One's called a binary operator. The other's called a unary operator. Give it the negative sign. Negative $28,995. Now, a couple of things. We're going to go back here and calculate the payment. But if you look down, FV has to do with balloons. Like if there, for example, when we do bonds in a couple of weeks, or next week actually, if we do bonds, they always pay $1,000 at the end. So there would be a balloon payment. Now car leases, have any of you ever done a car lease? In those, you actually make smaller payments for 3 years or something like that. But then if you want to keep the car, you have to pay a balloon payment at the end. So that would be one of those. And I'm not going to do that here. But otherwise, for simple loans like this, mortgage loans, car loans, FV is zero. Future value. Face value. Now, PY and CY, do not ever touch those. Do not. If you do, you will be struck by lightning. Think about it that way. Don't bother them. Don't let any of these manuals or any of these textbooks say, play with those. You're asking for a mess. Now, down here at the bottom, are you paying at the beginning or the end of every month? Now, if you borrow money today, you will pay at the end of that period. Normally, you will have end because these are what we call ordinary annuities. An annuity due, you pay at the beginning. There are times when you actually do have an annuity due. And I'll do one of those problems next. But normal loans, you take out your loan, a month later you make your first payment, or 30 days or whatever. Anyway, go back up to PMT, and you say alpha, the green button, solve, which is above the enter, alpha, enter, which is alpha solve, your payments will be $573 and, well, actually, $574 exactly. That was interesting. Are you going to be okay with that, madam? You can afford that, right?
Alpha solve,
which is just hitting alpha and the enter button because the solve is right above it. You okay on that one? That's fine. That's actually a pretty darn hefty payment. Think about it if you were buying a... You know the... Okay, I should be careful here. Have you seen those guys who drive around in those giant Ford F-150s and F-250s? Those are like 50, $60,000 trucks for people who don't need a truck at all. They're just driving it because they're inadequate. Okay. I didn't say that. Yes, I did. I mean, you're driving along, you know. Anyway, enough of that. Look, there's your payment. You've done it. Okay, now, let's do something a different way. You can do these back and forth any way you want. Now, you, sir, are a modest kind of person. You don't need a nice car. You can drive a car that is new, but it's ugly. Okay? You rely on a fake Facebook page that makes you look rich and extraordinary, sort of like Brad Pitt. So you're good. You don't need a fancy car. So let's say that you've worked it out that the bank would not allow you to pay a payment more than, let's say, $350 a month. That's the most that you could afford, and a bank would clear it. You figure that out. On a five-year loan, the same thing, same conditions. Five-year loan, APR of 6.99%. Let's put in a payment of $350 and then go back up and say, on the price, alpha solve. You can afford a car that costs $17,680. $680. Rounded up to the nearest dollar. In other words, when you go into the car dealership, you say, out the door, tax and title, it has to do that. You don't try to upsell me. Don't do it. Because that's what I can afford for a car. Tax and title, out the door, everything included, including a steering wheel. That's it. If you can find a way to do it, we're in business. If you can't, I'll go to another dealer and see what they can do for me. But that is my amount. In other words, doing it this way, walking backward into it, you know what your payment is, and then you know what your negotiation room is. Anything at or below that, price there. And then that gives you a lot more firmness in your position. You just say, whatever, you know, just take the tax, take the title, put everything in there so that at the end, when I sign the loan agreement, the amount of the loan is $17,680, period. Because then I will know that my payment is going to be $350 a month. Or something less than that if you negotiate down. But it gives you a place, and we do this a lot. We say, all right, look at our budgeting in a company. What can we afford to pay as far as the payment for a loan is concerned? What does our capital budget allow us? Then we know where we have to stand in negotiation for buying something because we know how much we can afford to pay for the loan to pay for it. That's how we do it in a lot of situations. And in our personal lives, we will do that too. When we do financial planning, that's one of the things that we do. We work on it. Now I'm going to take you back. Let me show you something here. Interesting. You might be asking yourself, sir, okay, what's my balance on the loan at 3 years? In other words, you know, if I were to estimate how much I could sell it for in 3 years and get a new car, what's my balance in 3 years? Well, that's easy to do. I mean, this is actually a real pain in the butt calculation if you do it with a formula. But watch, I've got it. It's already done the calculation of the payments and all that. So now I can go back in. I said second quit. Now, apps, finance. Now I'm going to go down, clear down to 9, which is BAL. Hit enter. Or just type in 9. It's either way. Okay, BAL. Now 3 years. Remember, you are doing things in months. So 3 years would be what? 36 months? Yeah, 36. Key in 36, close the parentheses. There you go. You still owe $7,818. That fast. That helps you, by the way, to decide, is this car going to have a value projected in 3 years above that? If it is, you're up, you're right side up. We say you're right side up on a loan if the value of the asset is more than the balance you owe. That's called right side up. If the value of the asset is less than what you owe, we say you're upside down. That's why when you're looking at cars, look at cars that hold their value. And there are good books of, and there are a couple of very reputable websites now that'll show you the projected economic depreciation of different cars. And so if you want a car every 3 years, well, it's actually doable. You just have to figure out, look at the how your amortization schedule works. And that's what we're doing here is amortization. Now, one quick point, and I'll bring this up again later. Consumer debt is fundamentally different from government and corporate debt. Because consumer debt, every payment, pays the interest that's due and pays part of the balance. Corporate and government debt pays only the interest. The entire balance stays the same no matter how long the loan is. And you pay, and it's paid off all at once at the end. So if a corporation borrows $10 million at 8% for 30 years, all it pays is 8% of $10 million for 30 years. And then at the end, it pays one last interest payment, and then it pays the whole $10 million back at once. That's how corporate and government debt work. They just service the debt. They don't amortize it. So consumer debt is different that way. Yeah.
How does that make any sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense.
Yes? I got, good
loan. Yes?
But, I'm a camp before smartphones.
Okay.
Digital cameras.
Good.
This loan's just great. I love your digital.
Your digital stuff. I like their printers, yes. You're having a hard time framing the question. Let me ask you this. I'm going to try it this way. Are you going to die someday?
No.
Yes, you are. It will be bad. I know, right? But you will have some shoes that we can take and stuff like that. Okay, here's the thing. Think of a life insurance company. When you make your payments on the premium payments, do they want to invest that in something where the money starts coming back to them right away? They want to have the money come back to them at your actuarial probability age of death. You see, most investors who are bond investors don't want their money back right away. They want it back someday in the future. They want interest payments. That's what fixed income investments are about. You see, when a couple at the age of 70, or let's say 60, comes to me, we've got $10 million. What I want to do is put that $10 million somewhere so that they get a fixed income pattern of interest payments, but the $10 million is not touched, ever. When an endowment is made to the university, and I'll talk about that, what we want is that endowment to pay a payment every year that pays for the professor, his or her assistants, and light bills for that, whatever it is, and all that kind of stuff. We don't ever want the original money back. We don't ever want it back. All we want is the interest payments on it. That's called a perpetuity. So in many cases, we do not want that original money back, at least for a very long time. We want its interest payments back.
Is that because we're trying to avoid paying taxes? No,
it's because we just want a cash flow. And we want a cash flow that is certain. You see, if I make that loan of $10 million to that company, I know that for 30 years, my $10 million is going to be someplace I don't have to worry about it, but I will get 8% of $10 million, $800,000 every year for 30 years. That predictable cash flow. stability, loss of risk, because it's coming back to me every year the same amount of money and the original principal balance. I don't have to worry about that for 30 years. And in 30 years, I flip it, I roll it over. That's why we do this. Now, let's say this. Suppose, sir, that you wish to retire in 1952? At the age of 52. In other words, in 40 years, you want to retire. Okay.
No, sir.
No, don't get greedy. Don't get greedy. I found out I can, if I teach another 17 years, I think it is, I can get $107 a month for my annuity. Good times.
Why don't you get an
annuity? It's a payment every month. But here we go. Okay, so watch this. You want to be a millionaire when you retire at 52. You want to have $1 million in the bank. Well, in fact, we can do that one real easily. I use the calculator, but I don't use the finance apps. I just use a formula. Watch this. Look, if I want to find a future value of money, I take the present value times 1 plus the interest rate over the number of compoundings per year to the number of years times the number of compoundings per year. The D is the number of compoundings per year. The R is the annual percentage rate, and the N is the number of years. That would be if I want to know, I don't know an amount in the future. If I know an amount in the future, then I can take the present value, what it's worth today, and take the future value times 1 plus the same formula except for the negative of D times N. I did that backward. It doesn't matter which way you do it. The one thing I warn you about, for heaven's sakes, watch out for, do use parentheses. And let the calculator do the calculations yourself. Now, let me talk a little about compoundings. If I said it's annual compounding, that's once a year, no big thing. If I said semi-annual, how many times a year would that be? Two. Now, what would the number be if I said quarterly? Four. Okay. What if I said bi-weekly? If I said weekly, what would it be? 52. You would be surprised. I did an exam one year. I had a bunch of students come up. You said weekly. How many weeks are in a year? Okay. 50. But if I say bi-weekly, that's actually 26. Semi-weekly would be 52 times 2, 104. Semi means twice a period. Bi means once every two periods. Okay? So in other words, bi-semi-annually would be annually. Wow, that's weird. Okay. Now, the question is, he wants to be a millionaire when he reaches the age of 52. So what we know in that one is we know his target in the future. So we'd need this formula because we want to know how much he needs to put in the bank today to make that happen. How much lump sum, and these are, by the way, lump sum. How much does he have to put in as a lump sum now to have this happen, to walk out in, what, 30 years? 30 years. And let's say that he can lock in 5.25%. He puts the money in the bank right now at 5.25%. He leaves it alone for 30 years. Okay. In this case, we would want to use this formula. We want to know the present value. So we would want the present value is $1 million times 1 plus 0.0525 over 1, there's only one compounding per year, to the 30 years. 30 times 1. Negative 30 times 1, I should say. Negative 30 times 1. Now, if he'd been compounding quarterly, we would have put a 4 down below and a 4 on top. Oh, by the way, what if compounding is daily? What number do you use? Careful. Actually, that's the one I would use. And we're more and more institutions are actually doing the 365.25. Interestingly, though, historically, they use 365 in the exponent and 360 in the denominator. Not exactly. There was a logic to it. There are 360 banker's days in a year. And there's also a sneaky reason, too. 360, there's a little trick of arithmetic that makes it an easy number to divide by, oddly. But best practices now, and don't do it in this class because the book wants you to use 360 and 360 or 365. Best practices now is what you said, though, the 365.25. But that's not how the banks are. Most of the textbooks are still using 365 and or 360. So you got to know what the context is. What are they telling you at the bank you're working at or in the textbook you're using to do this? Interestingly. And the calculator turned off again. So we're going to do 1 million, and do be careful about this, times 1 plus, open parenthesis, 1 plus 0.0525. And again, we're using math now, so we have to do the decimal. Y to the X, negative 30 times 1. If there would have been a multiplier in there, you would have had to have put that in parentheses. Don't leave an exponent naked if there's going to be a calculation done. Ready? Enter. You'd have to put in $215,445 right now. You're on your own, bro. Okay? Okay, that's what you'd have to put in right now to have a million in 30 years. It's a lot. Let's take a better problem. Let's take another problem here. Not a better problem, but a more realistic problem that takes you into the world of financial planning. We do have a financial planning institute here. It's one of the top 100 in the nation, and we're looking for majors for it. I don't teach much in financial planning because they don't trust me considering how badly my own finances are. So there's that, but you could kiss my butt. I mean, I had fun with my money, darn it. Okay, but let's try. Let's move forward about 15 years. Or no, let's move forward about 10 years. You, sir, have become married, and you and your wife have gotten, you're expecting your first child. Well, that night that it's born, it's an awesome experience. I mean, I was absolutely exhausted when it was over. You know, man, I was tired. I mean, I'd gone through a lot that day. Yeah. The lady had too, but it was nothing like the torment that I had, you know. So that night, after it was over, everyone was asleep, I went, obviously, to celebrate, I went to White Castle. 30. Cheeseburgers, extra onions, pickles. I mean, seriously, if you're going to have a baby, you need to have cramps, okay? So I celebrated. And then the next day, I went to, and you're going to do this too. You go to the financial planner and say, I have to plan for my child's college education at Illinois State University. I want to put a certain amount of money into the bank every year so that when the child turns 18, there is enough money in that account to pay for 4 full years of tuition at ISU. This is financial planning. You're actually seeing what we do. Now, I'm going to do a really quick and quick and loose, but it's the real deal. Okay, so the first thing we want to do, what's your tuition running here? Straight up? Well, 14, and then for your room and board, and
$80,000 by the end of 4 years.
Well, let's do it this way. We're going to do, let's take $20,000 per year, you're right, and then we're going to say times 4, that's $80,000. Now, what we're going to do, though, is let's adjust for inflation. In other words, let's see the make sure that when it's not going to be $20,000 a year. It's going to be $20,000 at the price of inflation over that. So what we would probably do is take about a 3% inflation rate to the 18th power. 18 years of inflation at 3%. You always do 1 plus a rate, always. Rates are just like sort of like mixed numbers. They really aren't calculation things. We have to do something to them. Rates are always 1 plus. You'll start to notice that all the time in finance and even in physics too. But so in other words, just to get the ball rolling here, we need to know how much that account has to have in 18 years. So if I were to take $80,000 and see the effect of inflation over 18 years, you're going to need, $136,195.
That's just regular inflation?
Yeah.
That's not even the exponential cost of inflation.
Well, no, that is exponential because that's a power. That's exponential. I see what you mean. Yeah, okay. Double that? No. We're already in trouble already. Let's talk, though. Let's talk. You see, because what you're going to do is you're going to put in your first payment right now. And every year until you have put in 18. So on the 17th birthday, the last payment goes in. And then on the 18th birthday, you pull it all out and you give it to the kid and say, good luck. This is a classic annuity. An annuity is just a stream of payments. An annuity is a stream of payments. A level annuity is every payment's the same. Unlevel is they're different. But it's just an annuity. And we can do this we can do this on a calculator. Now you come to me, a financial planner, and I say, okay, if you do exactly what I'm saying, I can lock you in a rate. Let's say I can lock you in a rate of 4.80% APR. I can lock it in, but if you ever don't make the payment, we're going to take a lot of money away from you. So in other words, with financial planning, we have to convey to our clients that you need to be disciplined. Don't come to me and say, well, you know, we're going to have a vacation, so we won't put in our payments. If they do that, you say, well, you're just going to pay a terrible price. Because earlier in your life, you think you deserve something that we didn't plan for. Well, that means that the worse it's going to be for you to get you back on track toward your goal. So in other words, the first thing we're going to have to do is say, okay, this rate applies only if you hit the mark on every one of the 18 payments you'll put in. The first one, you write me the checks today, and the last one you write on that kid's 17th birthday. So now, watch what we're going to do. We're going to go in here, apps, finance, again, TVM solver. Now, in this case, we have 18 yearly payments. In this case, it's 4.80, and there's no compounding. Other than once a year. It's just once a year compound. We don't have any present value to it. We're not going to put in an extra amount at the beginning. We're just going to run the payments. So the PV will be zero. The future value, however, has to be that $136,195. Here's the one you got to watch out for. This is an annuity due. Whoops. Sorry, I put in a few extra zeros there. This is an annuity due because you're putting in the payments at the beginning of every period. That seems to be, over the long, long years I've been teaching finance, that seems to be the one that's the most likely to trip people up, is are the payments at the beginning or the end of the period? Okay, we're done. Now we go back up. What are your payments going to be? Alpha, put it on the PMT, alpha, solve. You got to write me a check every year on that kid's birthday for $4,706.35. That's not too bad. Now, though, think about what we do. Our clients, they will say, all right, here are my goals. I want to buy a house in 7 years. I got a kid who's going to go to college in 14 years, another kid who's going to go to college in 17 years. I want to buy a new car every 3 years. We just do this for every one of our clients' goals, and then we say, all right, we add up the payments, write me the check for that. And every time one of these goals comes, the time comes for it, you got the money. That's what we do. I mean, it's just basically piling up these payments and saying, all right, this is what you write me the check for at the beginning of every year. Or you write me a check for this month, write me a check for this next month. It's just basically adding up all these payments, figuring out what their goals are. And this is where the real problem comes in, though. You see, because, excuse me, keeping the people from just tap in there and grab a little money because, you know, hey, I deserve an extra vacation. Or, you know, we decided we were going to redecorate this year and we didn't tell you. So we reached into that account. And then, of course, the whole scenario is blown. You have to recalculate everything. And then they just bitch at you because now you're going to write me checks for a lot more because you blew it at this part. You blew it in the stream. So we've got to rebuild you back to where you were before you decided to feel good about yourselves and spend some of this money. So there's that discipline aspect. And so if you're a financial planner, that's one of the things that you have to do. This is financial planning, step by step. Now the next thing, you can do a lot of different things. But coming out of this, and always you lead by second quit. That's the button above mode, second mode, quit. And then you're back out. Now, like I said, usually with lump sums, I just use a formula, calculate it, just make sure that you're using decimals and all that. Make sure you've got your compounding periods right and use parentheses where it's important to use parentheses. But for annuities, I mean, the calculator, like I said, the accounting books and your accounting classes, they want you to use these factors at the back in those massive tables. Don't do that here. Just use the stupid calculator. Now, like I said, annuity. An annuity is a fancy word for just a stream of cash, a cash flow. Technically, a lump sum is just an annuity with one event. Now, there are the level, which means the same payments, and the non-level. And then there is the kind where an ordinary annuity, where you pay the payments at the end. And then there's the annuity due, where you pay the payments at the beginning. That's just more or less the kind of like the round. Oh, also, regular. Sometimes you'll see the term regular annuity. That is an annuity where the time periods are the same. I mean, if you want to do irregular annuities, you're out of your mind. I don't even do those. Those are way too much like work. So most of the time, I don't even say regular annuity. You just assume your payments are at equal times going down the road. Now, the one I had mentioned before is this weird one called a perpetuity. A perpetuity is an annuity that lasts forever. A perpetuity is an annuity that lasts forever. You say, well, where in the world would you ever have a perpetuity? In fact, they are extraordinarily common. In finance, we price stocks as perpetuities because we assume that a corporation will live forever, so its dividend stream would go on forever, so we can take the present value of it by the price of the stock. Another place that is actually impacts on you, and I mentioned a version of this, but we have a great example. Just last year, we had a couple who wanted to donate a huge amount of money. They said, we want to endow a scholarship that will pay, I think it was like $10,000 every year for five scholarships. So in other words, that'd be $25,000 every year forever. Forever. And that's the way most of these scholarship endowments work. And they said, how much do we have to donate now so that that will happen? And it's actually super simple. It's so simple, you just use the calculator. You don't even use the apps to find out, all right, well, in order for this to happen, you would have to donate. Let me think what it was. There was, it wasn't 10,000. It was like almost like a full ride kind of thing for five of them. We figured out that it was going to be like $100,000 each, a total of about 120,000. We figured that it would be, they'd have to put in, donate, I think it was about $15 million. And that would create enough money in interest every year to give out those five scholarships forever, and the original money would never be touched. Forever. And we do endowed chairs here. There are people who donate money and say, I want to create a professorship that will last forever. You know, you have to decide who's going to be the professor in this chair. Pay enough for a couple of assistants for that professor and for the other bills that go along with the research the professor's going to do. And they say, how much do we have to put in? Okay, that's going to be about probably about $350,000, $400,000 a year. Work it out. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.